Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impoga. Tonight we'll discuss the post-election situation in Uganda. And tonight we have with us Teddy Ruge. He's a writer and businessman based in Uganda. Hello, Ted. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for the invitation.
You're welcome. We're also joined by Hussein Kiflo. Kiflo is a social and political commentator and a research associate at the Southern Methodist University, and is joining us from Texas. Good evening. Good afternoon, Kiflo.
Good afternoon, Douglas, and good afternoon, other panelists, or good evening.
Well, you're welcome to the show. And we also have regular panelist, Suleiman Mugula. He's an independent political analyst. He joins us from Durban in South Africa. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas, and my friend Kiflo, and the others.
Good evening, Suleiman. Good to hear your voice once again.
Yes.
Although on a tragic note.
I see. Well, As we said, our topic tonight, we're looking at the post-election situation in Uganda. General elections were held there on August 18th. Claims of rigging and violence at polling stations were reported, and voting was extended in several locations after reports of people not being allowed to cast their votes. According to the Electoral Commission, Museveni was re-elected with 61% of the vote to his main opposition challenger, Besigye's 35%. Opposition candidates claimed that the elections were marred by widespread fraud, voting irregularities, and the repeated arrest of opposition politicians, and a climate of voter intimidation. Let me start in Kampala. Teddy, bring us up to date. How is the situation like? Where are you, and how are people there reacting to this election?
You know, I've never actually seen a more morbid post-election environment than the post-election situation here in Kampala. And I would say morbid it sounds almost as if we're, you know, in a collective, attending a collective funeral for democracy in the country. Because I've never seen more silence or heard more silence than, you know, immediately the day the announcement was made and several days past the election. To where nearly the whole city, and I'm not sure about the rest of the country, but most of the people around me were extremely quiet, extremely stunned, and really just downcast.
And what's the reaction of the people to the continued arrest and release of the Dr. Kizza Besigye?
I think one of the things that Kizza did this term around, and I don't know how he actually did it or whether people have now attuned to his story and his struggle to represent an actual articulate opposition to the NRM, but he truly won over the country. He truly won over the youth in this electoral process, more so than any other time that he's actually run for president. I attended a few of the polling stations and actually was able to see the enthusiasm of people voting for him, and, you know, that stayed late into the night to watch the vote count, and the excitement around each time a ballot was announced with his name on it. There was really infectious excitement around that. And post-election, after the announcements were made, and every time that we would see each time in the news that he's getting arrested, I think even today he got arrested again. There's a lot of people that keep saying that, you know, he is the people's president. Museveni may have been elected, the Electoral Commission may have announced him as president, but Kizza Besigye definitely won over the country as the people's president. So there is this rally around him in support, maybe not vocally, maybe not on the streets, but you can tell definitely on social media as well as in private conversations and even border borders on the street that truly, truly support him.
I see. Kiflo, you normally refer to Uganda as your second home. Your immediate reaction to the electoral process there and what transpired, all those irregularities. And this time, even this time, the international observers at least came out strongly to condemn some of the acts there.
Thank you, Douglas. My immediate reaction was, I mean, it was not unexpected for me that this election would be rigged. In fact, prior to the presidential election, I wrote an article on my blog Spot that I wouldn't be surprised, if once again Museveni is said to be re-elected. And I was, what would have been a sweet surprise for me that, you know, if the Electoral Commission had declared that Museveni lost the election, but that is quite impossible. But one thing that I observed is that, you know, previously Uganda, like you said, Uganda is my second home. And most of us Ethiopians always think that Uganda, you know, in terms of better space, you know, in terms of space is better than our country. But now I think it's dangerously coming close to the situation in Ethiopia. And that is a very, very sad fact. You know, the case of this clamping down on social media and the frequency of the arrest of Dr. Kizza Besigye and other crackdown on other Ugandans. All these things tell you that Museveni is taking the country on a very, very dangerous path. And another point that I would like to add is what my brother said there, that Kizza Besigye is really the leader of Ugandans. This is not the first time. While I was in Uganda, I remember in 2011, I think the last election, if you remember, Museveni, after rigging that election too, he had his, let me say that, a coronation. You know, he invited some African strongmen, his fellow strongmen from Zimbabwe, from Ethiopia, the late Male Zenawi. And Museveni, I mean, Dr. Kizza Besigye had also to fly back from Nairobi, and they blocked his flight, you know, with the complicity of Kenya Airways. And that time, I remember, a Ugandan journalist, a friend of mine, Timothy Kalijero, observed that, Kizza Besigye is another dignitary, because the people, Ugandans, were ready to welcome him, to give him a VIP reception at Entebbe Airport. So, really, Kizza Besigye is a leader of Uganda.
Yes, Suleiman, unlike in the previous elections where people were a bit timid, this time they really showed where they belonged. They were very clear. You could tell from social media, from people, from us. I mean, even if you walked on Kampala streets, I was there in January, and you could go around and ask anybody randomly. They seem to have had enough. Does this help in any way?
Okay, before I come to that one, my first reaction, Douglas, I've talked to the Ugandans in the diaspora, in USA, in the UK, or let me call it in Europe, in Southern Africa. The way my brother in Uganda has said, the immediate response in the diaspora on the majority of Ugandans is one. There is a state of mourning in the diaspora. People don't want even to talk about the result. They are just mourning. The same silence which is in Kampala is also all over the world, wherever Ugandans are.
I see.
One of the reasons, number one, the primitive behavior of the security forces and the police, the brutal, indiscriminate tear gassing, paper spraying of fellow Ugandans without even a stone. Just going to the FDC offices, whether in Kampala or in the district in Barala or in Mbale, and you just indiscriminately paper spray fellow human beings, you blind them deliberately. The brutal shooting of people, not only rubber bullets, but even live bullets, in the eastern part of the country, people died. People were shot by soldiers. Number three, the brutal, the humiliation of the president-elect and the other leaders, it was very clear. It was in open day when they were attacking the FDC offices. Why frog jump a presidential candidate?
Mm-hmm.
Number four, the language, the vulgar language, the intimidating language, the crude language, the impolite language, not only from the high police officials, but even from the former president Museveni himself. The way he talks about
he's the current president,
candidates and the president elect, it shows the state which is rotten. So that is number one. That is why there is utter silence in Kampala. That is why there is a funeral-like condition in Kampala. One of it is the shock, the way the security forces behave like animals. I think ever since Amin left, we had never witnessed such brutality in the country. Then number two, to what you are saying, what has happened? Number one, what has happened in Uganda is not very surprising because it is not different from what has been happening before. Because what has happened now is what happened in 1996, in 2001, in 2006, in 2011. Why? Number one, in all these years, Museveni has never had majority support of Ugandans. In 1996, the president-elect was Kawanga Semwogerere. There was ballot stuffing, there was bribery, there was security forces taking over the role of the electoral commission, there was intimidation, there was coercion, there was ballot stuffing, there was deployment, there was vulgar language, there was brutality and shooting. That one happened in 1996, in 2001, in 2006. It happened in 2011. It was expected and it has happened the way many people expected it. Now, the difference was this time, the way my brother in Uganda was asking, what happened this time? This time, it is not only the opposition which was ready. Almost the whole nation was due for change. It was ready for change. It got itself ready for change. They voted for change. The rallies showed that they were determined to have change. They were ready to have change. Actually, even after election, even Museveni himself accepted and said, because he said, the newspapers like Monitor were unfair to him. They were showing Besigye's rallies to be bigger than him. They were not unfair. That was the truth. The people whom he had, he was ferrying them in buses from one region to another region, from one region to another region. So even himself, wherever he is, he knows that the Ugandans have decided they don't want him anymore. The country is due for change, and it voted for change. And his attempt to change the results, they are not paying. Whether he intimidates Besigye, whether he kills Besigye, unfortunately, unlike other elections, this time the issue is not about Besigye. The issue is that the population is tired. Besigye only helped to conscientize them to be a bit more proactive. And this time they are more proactive and ready to die for their vote.
Well, in case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from VOA Studios here in Washington. Our panelists are Teddy Ruge, an entrepreneur and writer based in Uganda. We also have Hussein Kifulu, a social and political commentator and a research associate at the Southern Methodist University. And also have Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst. And I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, here in Washington. Now, Ted, let me come back to you. There is this cloud of how the Electoral Commission announced the results. Many analysts and experts have some doubts as to whether the tally was correct. There's a press release from the European Union Observer Mission asking for declaration of results forms to be released publicly and be put on the web. The opposition FDC has also called for these forms, which don't seem to tally with what was announced by the commission. And today we get information from the FDC Secretary General saying that some officials and agents of FDC are being hunted down by security forces, some of them at gunpoint even, so they can be forced to sign falsified candidates' declaration forms. People don't seem to have given up on this result elections.
Well, I mean, we knew something was already going crazy the minute they stopped announcing polling station by polling station result and then started announcing bulk results. We knew something funny was going on. And by the time they ended up announcing the rest of the results, we noticed hours after doing some quick math and tallying, that in some situations it ended up like just in excess of 1,700 polling stations were not actually announced. Now, according to the Constitution, such irregularities and actual proof of these irregularities has to be provided to the courts within 10 days. Obviously, you can see what's going on within this 10-day window. Bessie J is being arrested and moved from place to place, or should I say, quote-unquote, escorted, as they say, because they're refusing to say he's actually under arrest. But he's unable to actually report these irregularities and contest the results according to his constitutional rights to be able to do that. Now, this issue of them chasing down and arresting oppositionals and actually raiding the FTC offices further exacerbates their effort to actually, you know, constitutionally do their job as the opposition to contest the results. And I think all of this is going to continue on for the next 10 days until that time is passed for him to actually be able to do that peacefully. It is not a very good situation here in terms of even people who are publishing analysis on the election results. We were among the first people, even before the elections, to announce that something was wrong with the Electoral Commission database of voters. We dug through the database and actually found 20,000 ghost voters that didn't add up. You know, we just did a very simple tally. You know, the number of declared women, number of declared men, and that number came up actually shorter than what is the Electoral Commission announced as the number of voters in the country. Furthermore, I think the Electoral Commission, according to their numbers, announced that of all the eligible voters in the country, we had achieved a somehow mysterious 98.5% voter registry across the country, which I don't think that is even possible. When the United States can't even get past 60% voter registry, I don't understand how Uganda ended up with 98.5. And if you allow for actual margin of error between 1 and 3%, that means 100%, over 100% of eligible voters actually, registered to vote. And you can see the numbers just do not make any kind of sense. And it's troubling that, you know, Electoral Commission's one job is to make sure, you know, we have free and fair elections in the country. And when you start from that kind of a premise, you already know that the entire process was partisan and it wasn't free and it wasn't fair for the opposition.
Yes, and now following up on that, Kifulu and Suleiman, I found it very interesting that for the first time on an African election, international observers have expressed similar concern to what Ted is pointing out, because some actually did mention in their reports some of those irregularities. So let me begin with Kifulu. Do you think this time the international community may lean on the Electoral Commission to release, for instance, these declaration forms?
No, I don't think so. But at the same time, if you remember the case of Ethiopia, the Ethiopian regime, the incumbent, the ruling party, rigged election twice, or in fact over three times in the recent history, big time. And I remember the one in 2005 vividly. The European Union observer team rejected the results announced by the Electoral Commission. And then the one followed after that, you know, four, 5 years later. But still, the EU governments, despite the European Union observers' mission statement, you know, they went ahead and continued to do business with the ruling party for various reasons. What they call, you know, what is called on this strategical interest. There is the case of Somalia and many other issues. So I think the same thing might happen in Uganda. So still, the fate, the decision is in Ugandan's hands. You know, mm-hmm. Ugandans who care about their country, they shouldn't rely too much on foreigners, because we Ethiopians, we learn it the hard way. Yes, there are good people in the international community, in the observers mission. You know, they speak the truth, they expose, you know, the rigging, you know, all this cheating. But ultimately, it is the government, the European governments, who make the decision. And what they take into consideration is their interest, this geopolitical interest. And so the way I see it, they still think that Museveni is, you know, is relevant to their selfish geopolitical interest. Mm-hmm. So they may want to continue to do business with him for some time. But again, like I said, it is the Ugandans who can make a change, who can, you know, they can make it impossible for him to govern without their consent, and then the European governments, the United States, they would change their position. That's how I see it.
I see. Suleiman, do you see it the same way?
Douglas, yes, in Africa, by and large, we had come to have misgivings about the international observers, because, as we have known in the past, from their track records, they seem to be more interested in other interests which we don't know, because many of these things usually are glaring. I think what has made the difference this time, there are two issues. Number one, most of the international observers, the EU and all the rest, many of them have been observing Ugandan elections and have been making recommendations. So some of them, when they are fresh, what they come, when they arrive in the country, they have to at least look at what they recommended, whether it has been implemented. I think many of them got a shock to find that from 1996, the government has been so arrogant, so unconcerned, that very few reforms have been made, mm-hmm. because they are briefed. So that is point number one. I think even themselves were disappointed. Point number two, and most important, everything that has a beginning has an end. 30 years alone, when they arrived in the country, as I said from the beginning, Uganda was ready for change. You could see it, you could feel it, you could touch it. So even if you had come with your preconceived ideas, you would be swept by the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Anybody who would land in Kampala would see that the country is ready and is determined to have a change from a 30-year rule. So I think this one also, the prevailing conditions also contributed to this time, seeing that they are more absolute, they are more clear, and they are more on the side of the people than the lackluster reports which they usually give. This time, they are giving actual the actual observations, mm-hmm. and critical observations which are necessary. And they are taking a stand. Mm-hmm. Many of them are saying the elections don't meet international basics, even the baselines. They are below the expected standards.
I see. Teddy, you're there. And is it possible that you can wish away the millions of people, the supporters of, especially of Kizza Besigye, who were so enthusiastic, who supported him so much by contributing money and did all they could, and then some of them, their votes didn't even count?
Ask the question again.
I was wondering whether it's possible to wish away the millions of Kizza Besigye supporters who contributed and supported him so much, and some of them didn't even have their votes counted.
Well, I don't think you're going to just wish them away. I think what we're having right now is a collective sigh to what has happened. And what's going to be interesting is what happens between now and 2021. With all of this energy, we also have to remember our country is very young. And our young population is actually a lot more educated than our population was in the 30 years ago. It's a lot more exposed to information, to what the world has to say. It's a lot more connected. They're a lot more connected even within the country than they were 30 years ago. So information flows. So there's a galvanizing of effort to say, yes, we do need change. And my colleague was right. There is a sense that we are ready for change, and that change has to happen now. And I've said before, the winds of change are blowing in the right direction. They may not manifest themselves in 2016. They may manifest themselves in 2017, but definitely somewhere between now and 2021, we will see a change within the country. I don't want to speculate how that change comes about, but there is a sentiment in this country, and there is a movement in this country, and a belief that we deserve better. And the voters and everyone here that saw their vote not count, especially those districts and polling stations where their voice was not actually counted by the Electoral Commission, that sentiment and that drive to actually make sure that there is change and that there is participation from the polls all the way up to recognition of their participation at the Electoral Commission, that change is definitely going to happen. We cannot simply just wish away all of the millions of people that I witnessed at those rallies. That has a way, just attending those rallies and seeing the number of people that were there to support change, whoever it was. I don't think necessarily that it was necessarily Besigye. I think that Besigye was the best man standing for the opposition. Yeah. But the sentiment is that change has arrived, and it's time to actually look for that. And you only needed to just attend one of the rallies at Nambole Stadium. I've never seen a football pitch so full, even when we were, Uganda Cranes were doing their best. I've never seen it so full to where people were flowing outside and actually filling Jinja Highway, unable to actually get to the ramp to get to the station. That kind of sentiment, that kind of crowd mentality to say our country is ready for change is definitely going to happen. It's going to push through, this intransigent with this government that is definitely saying, no, we want to actually stay where we are. Mm. But we have a massive crowd of youth that, remember, gets older every day, gets more politically savvy every day, gets more articulate, gets more passionate with each day as it goes on. I've kept saying and observing, we can't continue to graduate 400,000, you'll put 400,000 people into the job market to a situation where they can only compete for like 10,000 jobs. How many borders are we actually going to put on the streets?
Okay, we're out of time, gentlemen. We have only 10 seconds.
The way my brother has said, it is not the supporters of Besigye, it is the supporters of change. The issue is changing the country, the way they have chased all the supporters of the agents of Museveni. You realize that Otafiri was defeated.
Yes.
Almost
17 ministers.
Almost all the people who came with Museveni were chased from the primaries. And from the elections, which shows that the country is ready for a new team.
All right, gentlemen, we are out of time. This is the end of this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, Teddy Ruje, a writer and entrepreneur, Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst, and Hussein Kifulu, a social and political commentator. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show. And we'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that you can listen to this program again on the internet. Thanks very much for tuning in. I'm Douglas Impuka in Washington, wishing you all the best.